Today is the 15th of February 2018. I'm interviewing Marion Kiddle, her son Ian, her daughters Lee and Vivian and Marion. Tell us something about what it was like in the early days of your family growing up as a girl in Lower Hutt.
It's not a long time ago. Well, what was it like? Well, we went to school. What was the primary school? Eastern Hutt, I think, was the primary school. And it was half a mile away, I suppose.
Can I just... Well, you were the third of the family. There was George and Hugh that preceded you. Perhaps you could start there.
Yes, I had two brothers, George and Hugh, and there was me and Sister Thora. And, as I said, we went to Eastern Hutt Primary School. We ran to school.
I can remember Mum saying that they ran along the corrugated iron fences, where their hand along or stick along and listen to the noise. Mum, could you say anything about Grandad's work? Your father?
Oh, he was a paleontologist. He worked for the Geological Survey in Wellington. And he was very keen on science and Morris. He didn't insist, but he encouraged us to go in for a scientific career. So I did zoology, and my two brothers also did zoology, which I quite enjoyed doing. But I have got more interested in psychology as I got older.
Just looking at your family history, you married your primary school boyfriend.
Well, he was my brother's best friend.
Yes. And then you and Ken tried several business things. But the big adventure was when you decided you'd come to Hawke's Bay and become orchardists.
Well, Ken, he worked for commercial cleaners, I think, at the time. And John Stevenson was a friend of ours. And
he came up to Hawke's Bay and
bought an orchard. Right. He bought an orchard. He came up. He worked for commercial cleaners also. As a secretary. Well, I suppose it was a secretary. But he decided he wanted to do something else, so he came up to Hawke's Bay. And that's what gave Ken the idea, really. And so I went along with it. Where did we live first? Up here, down the corner.
Wamarama Road. You bought the bungalow and 12 acres on Wamarama Road.
That's the start of the...
The start of the orchard. Yes. And we had a family of five children.
Lee, just to add in to the bit before they came up, we fast-tracked Mum. When she was at school, she was very, very bright. She was actually ducks at the high school twice because she had to repeat a year because she was too young to go to university. And I have a copy of a letter that my grandfather received, Marion's father. She was tested and they said that she did this IQ test. And basically what came back, that she was so bright they shouldn't let her know because... I think that she was a female.
Yes. Did you know that, Ian?
That's really quite a story, isn't it?
Yes, but it's another story in itself.
Well, I remember the headmaster at Hutmanley High School, where we went after primary school, and he said to me, what was I going to do? I said, well, I was going to do zoology because it must have been my last year at school. And he said, it's stuck in my mind ever since.
You won't get a man like that.
I'd get married and have children, so more or less what was the point of doing zoology? That's always stuck in my mind, a peculiar thing to say.
Yes, well, then you came to Hawke's Bay, and of course there were several critics because there were so many old orchardists around here. Was the Clayton property you bought originally?
No, it was... I don't remember the name of the people who owned that one. It's the one where Tuki Vineyard is at present, and then several years later they bought Ray Gibson's property on the other side of River Road.
Mum and Dad did.
Yes. Mm. Do you remember the name, Mum? Who owned the house up Wamarama Road before you, when you came up and bought it? It's a bit far back from me.
Yes. And then you bought some more orchard?
Mm-hmm. You went in partnership with, remember, Don McKenzie.
Don McKenzie, yeah. Who worked for the DSA.
Yeah.
You worked with him too. Marion worked at the DSAR with Don as well.
I remember Ron Clayton saying that they were sort of existing orchards and Dad and Don were planting apple trees and they sort of were, it's a new thing. But, they weren't convinced, but they proved them wrong. Don's single leader, semi-intensive system worked really well and they were the first real plantation or orchard of that style. And the Claytons eventually followed suit with their apples.
And it's only just recently that Kim has sold out of orcharding, hasn't he?
Well, he's bought the Dorwards place. Oh. I mean, it's just a tiny plum block, and I lease it.
When Mum and Dad moved here, my understanding is they had great support from these neighbours that were already there. So the McLeods, the Dorwards, and the Websters, particularly. There were obviously orcharding people, but they were neighbours that were just so supportive and helpful. And the Bogues as well.
Vic Bogue was a world.
And Maxine is a current councillor, and they helped Mum and Dad a lot as well.
As the family or the orchard grew, Vineyard came into existence then, didn't it?
That was quite a lot later, because you were the first one to move back, eh?
Yes, yeah. I moved back and we moved into the house in River Road that was once upon a time Ray Gibson's house and was basically used as a packing shed by Mum and Dad. When their 12-acre block, when they bought it, became 24 acres. And we moved back into that and we had a daughter and then had another daughter. And I bought that 12-acre block. But in the meantime, they had sold the 12 acres across the road and bought this property here with Don. I came back and then a few years later, Ron Clayton's property came up for sale. And
the vineyard was between that though.
Was it?
Yeah, the Ron Clayton's was a lot later.
Sorry, you're right, yeah. The next sort of land deal was when Vivian and Morton bought Sandy Lowe's property, adjoining Dad and Don's property. But then sometime later again, Ron Clayton sold up, and Dad and I went into that. It was two different blocks, 12 and a 14-acre, and I bought one, and he bought the other, and that joined the whole, all the properties up.
As one unit.
Yes. Vivian and Morton's property with Dad and Don's. And then a little later, Lee came on the picture and bought one of those off.
It was actually at the same time. I was overseas and Dad rang me and said, would I be interested in buying this property because they were going to go in. None of the Clayton children were interested. And so we said yes. So we had said we were going to buy it. And then when we came back, we had to sort out because the pack house was on, so it took a while.
It's amazing that a very intellectual family is so green-fingered.
I think if you live in the country, if you grow up in the country, you want to live in the country.
Yes, you're probably quite right. But it is interesting to see such a dramatic change from people who were...
Yes, I know. I remember Mum telling me her father, who was a scientist, a very noted scientist, actually a very interesting man. He was concerned about them moving away from a university town. Yeah, I was really surprised because he was also a very humble man and very, a very good man. And I thought that seems a bit out of character to say that.
I knew Ken and Marion really through Rotary. I always remember Ken saying he and his brothers used to go up to Whakapapa in the summertime when there was no snow, just bare rocks. I don't know whether the ladies went too or whether it was just the men, the brothers.
Yes. Well, Bill, his brother, was, a big mover in the sort of ski club up there. And perhaps that's why they were up there. What they did used to do was ride their bikes. Dad was friends with Hugh and George and his brothers. I'm not quite sure who was involved, but one time they got the train up to Auckland and rode their bikes back to Wellington. And another time, I think they did it the other way around.
Some of the roads they would have come through the centre of North Island would be roughies.
Yes, they were. And he said they tied bits of branches to their bikes to slow them down going down the hills.
Yes. Ken always was a man who liked to be involved in trying to help things in the right directions. Politically, that was one of his fortes, and he must have been a very, very forceful and well-planned chairman of the Apple and Pear Board because he reorganised shipping. He got rid of millions of debt, all sorts of things. He certainly was recognised by the Queen and by the industry, but it doesn't really tell us much about him as a person. I guess at the end it was very disappointing for Ken that the orderly marketing system we had was taken away by other powers.
It was other orchardists.
I can remember going to some of the meetings at that time, and the conflict and the ill feeling was quite high.
Yes.
The two-tier levy was the thing that got them.
Yes, it was very divisive.
Yes, it's quite ironic really that the apple and pear board, you know, it was bought by Turners and Growers in the end. Then Turners and Growers was bought by Wapo or whatever they're called.
Baywa.
Baywa, yeah. Mm. They're a German growers cooperative, and now the entity that was the apple and pear board owned wholly by New Zealand Growers is owned, I just read it the other day, 60% I think by the German company, 20% by a Chinese company. No. Well, there's only 6% New Zealand ownership now of it. And it's kind of ironic that what was once owned by New Zealand growers is now owned by German growers, basically.
Going back to you saying about Dad as the man at that time, because when he was chairman of the apple and pear board, he was also chair of the joint producer boards, and he was very good at doing the shipping, the freight, and so the other boards got him to do that as well. And I remember he was away a lot. I was the youngest, so I was at home alone with Mum, and so Dad was away a lot. But I do recall people involved either in those boards that knew him when they came, and they might come for dinner or something, and they used to come up to me and say, I remember one, Alan Scott, for instance, and he said, oh, you should be very proud of your father. You don't know what he does, but you should just be proud of him. And then likewise with Rod Weir, he was meat, I think, on the meat. He also, so it was lovely that they took the time, that they obviously thought of him as a person and what he was doing for the industry, to speak to one of his children. And again, when I was living in London, and I would go to London House and the same, they would talk about my father and say what a lovely man he was, and also when it came to talks, how good he was at it. Like when they were in other languages, how he would pretend he couldn't understand them at all, but he actually knew something that was going on, that sort of thing.
Just a practical person and a very humble man at that.
And he was a family man, and it's quite funny actually, because when I was young, I decided I was never going to live on an orchard because you can't go on holidays in the summer. I was never ever going to, and then I came back, and then yeah. But we used to go on winter holidays, and we must have covered most of New Zealand going on winter holidays, and we'd be in the old Valiant. Well, I remember, you probably don't remember this, but
I remember Valiant.
So in those days, safety belts and all that were not, I don't think anyone wore them. But there must have been three person in the middle of the front. Anyway, often you'd be in the back seat and there'd be someone lying over the top of you, over the top of us. And Mum and Dad used
to rotate around.
Especially Mum used to sing. Yeah, we did
rotate around.
We were a very democratic family, and we did a big road trip of the South Island, and every day we would move on a seat. So three or four of us across the back seat, because the window seats were the prime seats. One in the front in between Mum and Dad. And every day we'd move around.
So later on, we have the vineyard, Akarangi.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, one of the meanings of Aka is vine, and Mum and Dad had called this place Hurarangi, which was
fruit of the gods.
Yeah, fruit of the gods. So one way of interpreting Akarangi is vines of the gods, or heavenly vines.
Yes. And so that was planted mainly on some of the river flats down here.
Up there, yeah.
But there's no grapes that way, is there?
No, not now, although there were some.
And so what sort of grapes have you got there?
Chardonnay, Riesling, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Malbec.
And you make your own wine?
Yes.
Who's the winemaker?
Well, our oldest son Ben has made it the last few years.
So how many acres have you got in grapes?
Not that many. It's very, very small. It's probably only 3 hectares max, probably less than that.
And Ian, with the orchard, you've got a mixture. You have plums and stone fruit.
Yeah, basically significant crops are plums and apples. At one stage, returns were terrible for apples, and I could see these organic growers getting big money. And so Dad didn't particularly like the idea, but we went organic, and it also suited. We were still running a pack house at that time, and everyone was moving to big pack houses, and being organic, you could still pack, and it suited a small operation much better. So we did that. Unfortunately, the global financial crisis came along in the year we would have had really good returns, and organic returns plummeted. And then the following years weren't that great, because the longer you're in organics, the more pest and disease problems arise. And then we had a shocking summer where it rained every week, and it was, you know, absolutely hopeless. And so we decided the following year we couldn't stand another summer like that. We converted all this, about two-thirds of the apples, back to conventional, and the plums and the apples up there, which were mixed in with the plums, really stayed organic, and that's the way we run it. But we don't pack for export anymore, just local market, and the conventional stuff all goes to Mr. Apple. And it's been, returns for conventional and organic have done really well since that, and so it's been good.
So you were down here when West Wind was burnt?
No. Mum, do you remember when Sandy Lowe's boat burned? That was in the shed here.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't remember that.
Oh, it did.
And he rebuilt it.
The second one.
And that's, he sailed away in the second one. Yeah, it was a Kauri boat, apparently.
And for many years, this land from Undercliff through to the Black Bridge was never looked on as very good land. But they found that it was particularly good for orchard. Some of the best fruit in Hawke's Bay came off this strip inside the edge of the Tuki to right through.
Yes, I don't think it's as fertile as sort of Twyford and that, but it does produce nice fruit. And I think because it's a wee bit harder, like the Fuji variety came out, and Dad and Don planted that. And we used to get really good colour compared to the stuff grown in Hastings, and it was because the ground just suited it. And the same thing applies with grapes, I think.
Well, it must have been wonderful to have a partner like Dr. Don. You know, one of the forerunners of orcharding, especially of modern orcharding.
Yes, I think he was a really big help. You know, like Dad basically managed the orchard, Don didn't really, but his ideas were used in the planting and the choice of varieties and all that sort of thing.
Pruning.
Yes.
And they had quite structure. A few, not exactly experimental, like Scarlet Pimpernel apples and early Macintosh.
Yeah, there was hundreds. Lobo, varieties you've never heard of.
And didn't they do something, didn't they track birds and tape record their calls? Distress calls, something like that. All the idea was you'd play them, and it would, because they attacked those early apples.
Yeah, they did the Scarlet Pimpernel. Yes.
They're talking now, 1080 poisoning is bringing so many birds back in the forest, they're worried that they may come down into the lowlands and start eating the fruit.
Wow.
Well, we see the odd pigeon, and we see tuis and pigeons and bellbirds regularly at our place. Not in huge numbers, but pukekas we see in huge numbers.
Yeah. We took their wetlands away from them, didn't we? So, all the families here except your Nelson brother, and what does he do in Nelson?
Well, he's a doctor, but he's really more interested in... he bought a property that he's been developing, and he's got more interested in that than being a doctor.
Yeah. He's actually retired recently.
So, you've got Ian, Vivian...
Brilliant, the eldest.
Jackie, Lee.
And Edwin.
Brilliant, Edwin, Jackie and Lee.
Edwin became the medical officer of health for Nelson, whatever that health board is called.
Nelson
Harbour. And he's only just retired, really, was it?
Yes, he's been slowly reducing his hours for the last couple of years.
And he's got this, his mum said, this block with cattle and stuff like that on it.
Lots of trees, a bit like Eastwood Hill on a small scale, you know. He plants all sorts of trees. Yeah.
How long since you've been to Eastwood Hills?
Quite a while.
Yeah, why has it changed?
It's grown.
Because that was something we used to do.
It'll be the last time I went, whenever that was.
Because Mum's and Dad's birthdays were Dad late April, Mum early May, and we used to go away for a family weekend somewhere every year.
Yes.
And Eastwood Hill was one. We'd stay in a house, and we went to that Bushy Park.
Yes.
One in Central Bay, different places. Yes. Oh, and Ruapehu, remember that?
Yeah.
Yes. The Chateau.
That's right, we went to the Chateau, and Edmund Hillary was at dinner there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, at Eastwood Hills, I couldn't believe how big the trees are and how steep the hills have got.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what about the things you've forgotten to tell me?
Well, I did note a couple of things. Mum used to take lots and lots of photos, actually slides, And so I've scanned them of all sorts of things. And her father, granddad, John Marwick, used to take photos and develop them. Did you used to develop your own photos too? No, it was just granddad. So he took heaps of photos as well. And yeah, so we've got photos of just about everything.
It's better if you have the original photos.
I do have a box of the photos. The thing is, there's a lot of slides that I've scanned as well.
We do slides, we do film, we do glass plates.
I'd just like to add, Mum was really, I mean, Dad was very successful in his chosen field. Well, not really in his chosen field, but as an apple and pear board and fruit grower industry leader. But Mum really sort of backstopped that. You know, she looked after us when Dad was travelling. And she travelled with him sometimes and launched a few ships, as it happens. And she was, you know, she was a stay-at-home mum, except for when she went teaching at Iona, teaching maths. And also she worked with Don at the DSIR, transcribing stuff, because she was a good typist. And she backed up Dad with her typing as well. There was no computers in those days. But when computers did come, Mum was one of the first ones to pick them up, and she was a gun at Excel, you know. I remember her trying to, she developed this spreadsheet for doing the wages on the orchard, and she'd try to explain to me how to use it, and, you know, she had macros and things. I couldn't ever get the hang of it.
She actually wrote some of her own programs.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, and she really was clever at computers.
She was very, very good at maths, and, I mean, when I was at school, I had a really useless maths teacher, and most people don't do well at maths, but I did because Mum taught me at home.
That probably applied to me too. I got a very good mark in UE.
So which school did you guys go to?
Karamo.
Yes, Karamo. I think Lee may have gone to Havelock. But
did she?
No, maybe not.
She moved to Karamo.
Should teach you
in Karamo before the time of Havelock.
But you would have gone to Havelock Primary.
No. Oh, yes, I did, but I was the only one. I went for about 3 terms and then Tanata.
Of course.
The foundation of Tanata. And that is so different now to how it was then.
Oh. Yes, there used to be orchards all around that, you know, around the paddock. Now there's houses.
Or vehicles.
Yeah. We used to go to, every year there would be a school class trip down to Russell Robertson's pack house, you know, and we'd look at the fruit being packed and walk down there and walk back again.
Are you interested? Because I've got something on John Marwick's life. It's on the internet, but I printed it out. We had a huge Marwick family reunion Christmas before last.
Yes, I was going to ask you that. But we need to go back to trap some of the high parts of the family. Intellect on Marion's side, her father or grandfather.
And her mother. They both actually were teachers at one point. Didn't granddad train as a teacher too?
I don't know.
Did your dad, did he train as a teacher?
No.
He didn't either. Just granny.
I don't
think so. There were, like, granddad's sister, Thora, was a real eccentric, we say that these days. She lived most of her life in London, and she translated the stuff from Icelandic to English.
She could speak seven languages.
Yep, and she booked a seat with Pan Am to fly to the moon. This is years and years ago. No one had been to the moon, but, you know, future. She anticipated that. Never got to go. Yeah, she did. I remember that.
You know, a few things. Ken was a very good hockey player.
Yes, yeah, so was Mum. And Mum was also a champion swimmer.
See, that's something we didn't hear about. Yeah. For the province?
At school.
I've got a bit of a funny story. My daughter, Rebecca, works at University of Wellington, Victoria, and she's in the geography department. It's sort of quite a soft science. It's part of the same department that the geology department, the earth sciences, are in. And at some point, her boss or someone further up and that side of things discovered that she was John Marwick's granddaughter, is it?
Great-granddaughter.
Great-granddaughter. Right. And he couldn't believe it, you know, because she was, you know, they were hard scientists. And, anyway, she went up in his estimation after he discovered, because John Marwick had quite a reputation there because he authored a book classifying New Zealand fossils. I think he co-authored it, you know, and yeah, they all seem to know his name.
Well, Mum's side of the family we know much more about than Dad's. We really only... Dad's mother was part French, and she died when Dad was 10, yeah. But we don't really know of anything. Well, I think there's a lot of... It's like school curriculum, there's a lot of extra stuff. You know, there's TV to watch and the Olympics to watch and this and that and all sorts of stuff.
And so how many grandchildren have you?
I think it's 18.
19, I think.
Because what I need is one of you to write a list of their names and when they're born.
I'll take responsibility for that. I've got all their birth dates, but not the year. I'll have to email everyone again.
So there must be some great-grandchildren too.
I think there's a great-great. Isn't Toby a great-great?
No.
He's not.
No, Claire's your grandchild.
Yeah, Claire's your grandchild and Toby's your great-grandchild. They're nearly all from Edwin's side, the great-grandchildren. Three of his kids have kids. Only one. That's my grandson. The only one I have.
What's his name?
It's Toby.
Some reason for that. The father's check.
Yeah, his father's
that's
not really a reason
yes.
for his name.
I thought they chose it because it was a name in both English.
Oh, yes, that you could say. Yes, because some Czech words are, some letters are pronounced differently. You're right.
But another, just looking at that, I see John Beaumont's photo there. Mum and Dad had a long history with Cliff Brabington and John Beaumont. And who was the other guy in your...
Sorensen.
Brian Sorensen. They had a betting syndicate together. And that provided hours of fun for them. You know, every weekend they would fax each other. They'd take turns at picking and, you know, they'd fax each other their picks.
And some of the faxes were actually, well, Mum and Jean Beaumont particularly wrote poems, limericks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Jean used to work at the Hort, didn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, I bumped into her in Havelock. And she asked after...
At John's funeral, they played the first 5 minutes of his interview. What it was like growing up in heaven. It was amazing.
Well, but I was there. We must have heard it.
Okay, one of the things, Ken used to ride to the butcher to get a side of mutton.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
His father, and you know, his father must have been a very capable man to have brought those boys up for a while on his own.
Yes, yeah. Then he married Ginge, Jean.
But he lived in India, didn't he, for a while?
Pop. Did he?
Didn't he?
Well, probably. I don't know.
He was, his occupation was installing those...
Cash and carry.
You know, Bob Marsh used to have those compressed air. Yeah.
And one or two other things, his allegiance to Tui Brewery.
I buy Tui because of that. Everyone gets annoyed with me.
Most of us don't drink it.
No. I get told off for buying it, but we do.
And in 1951, Marion and Ken built their own house.
No.
We did.
1951, that's the year I was born.
In Christchurch.
Oh, in Christchurch. Yes. Yeah, of course. Mum and Dad built three houses.
Three?
Well, the Batch and this and that one.
Yeah, but well, when you say built, the Batch and the one in Christchurch, they actually were hands-on.
Well, yes.
This one was a contractor.
Yeah, you're right. One thing I remember, it was to do with Don, because when they first bought here, it was all farmland, and they grew everlasting flowers. It was Don's idea. And I remember that house up on the corner, but I remember it being filled with these flowers. There were all these old bedspreads, also pumpkins. I remember chucking there's a chain line of people chucking pumpkins, and it was filled with flowers, which was quite amazing. I don't think they did very well financially with that.
No, definitely.
Actually, the other thing was chucking. Do you remember how they used to load the old trucks with the stone fruit, the wooden boxes? It was chucking them up.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
The shed up there had a raised floor so that the truck would pull up alongside and you would load them out of the cool store and have a sort of chain thrown into each other.
And
the last guy stacking them on the truck.
Of course, most of the orchards were centred closer to Hastings. Clayton's was one of the few orchards that was out here originally, and Alf's.
Yeah, and Ray Gibson, that's the place that we moved up to. He had a dairy shed and a couple of dairy cows. Mm. One of them was called Bridget, I remember that.
Dog called Storm that everyone was scared of.
It's a lovely little road, isn't it?
Yes.
River Road.
It
is. And Undercliff.
The other thing I've just noted, all of us worked on the orchard, obviously.
Yes, well, it's been a family enterprise, and it's still a family enterprise, isn't it?
Yes.
Mum used to, just something else about Mum I've just thought of. She obviously used to work on the orchard heaps, and I can remember Dad saying, she took up golf when she was older, and Dad saying he was glad that she, because she'd worked so hard all her life, she was glad she'd do that. She was very, very good at golf, and she actually got a hole-in-one when she was 80. It was in the newspaper.
My second
this was
hole-in-one.
It was her second hole-in-one,
was this at Bridge Power?
No, it was at Flaxman.
Now, one thing I didn't ask you, you must be 90-something.
94.
She'd be 95 in May, not far away now.
I had an aunt who lived till she was 106. So there's some good genes. I gave up driving because I felt I'd hate to kill somebody.
What I remember was that when we were kids, Don wasn't married at that stage. And so he actually spoiled us in lieu of spoiling his own family. And we used to get really nice Christmas presents from him. We and Edwin got a Scalextric race car set, you know, electric thing.
What I remember is when he lived in a flat in Havelock North, and he was one of the first people to get television. And we used to go there once a week to watch Doctor Who on television. Black and white TV. You don't remember that?
No.
I don't remember that.
Ed would probably remember.
I remember going to the Bogues to watch the Monkees. That was because someone had a music lesson. They had TV and we'd watch the Monkees.
Another thing Dad enjoyed was classical music. Like, there's quite a selection of records here. I could never understand it. Why anyone would want to listen to sopranos. I've come to appreciate them more over the years.
Okay, well, on that I will say thank you, Kiddle family, for bringing me up to speed on the history. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Very nice to have someone taken it.